Can you imagine if any of the like our regular listeners, they've been like telling their mates, you've got to listen to Podomap. Honestly, it's really good. It's a really good show. And finally they go, listen, oh, fine, shut up. I will listen to Podomap. If you shut up about it, I will listen. And then they pick this episode.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hi, welcome to episode 59 of Podomap. We're on the hunt for simians this month in our PS1 book club pick, Ape Escape, plus Tomb Raider Remastered, Nintendo vs. Yuzu, and an incoming indie to boot. Here, his name is Tibbs.
That's me.
That's you. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm a bit tired.
Yeah?
I'm a bit tired, so might just have a little sleepy during this one.
Have a little sleepy during the show. Leave it to me. I'll take over.
I'll give you something. That's right. Absolutely. No, I don't agree with that. You could just cut those out. Just fit those in amongst the show.
I don't think they'll even notice. Yeah.
No.
No, seamless.
Flawless plan.
So this month we are playing Ape Escape in the book club.
Yes.
So we've been playing that. But what else have you been playing then, Tibbs?
I haven't been playing very much. It's one of those months we've had where lots of real life stuff gets in the way.
Yeah.
And I really haven't had that much time to. Or inclination, really, to do much gaming. I've been playing mainly the Tomb Raider remaster. It's on the Steam Deck and it's portable, so I can, when I've been going to and fro, I could just be playing a bit of that. It's a really nice remaster.
I've heard it's doing really well.
Yeah, it's really good. It's exactly what you want from a remaster, really. The game engine. It seems to be almost identical. There's lots of little quirks. I wouldn't call them bugs per se, but there's lots of little quirks with the original engine that have been replicated in this one.
Oh, right.
And it's not the sort of thing, like, for instance, in Tomb Raider 3, on the first level, there's a bit where you go up a fallen log and there's some shafts of light coming through, like the jungle canopy above, and for some reason it's like I think it's a bug with the collision detection. As you hit one of the shafts of light, it's almost as if it's got collision and you'll just sort of judder on it a little bit as you go through it.
Right, I see. Yeah,
that happens in it's been fixed with the latest patch, I think, but when it launched that happened in the remasters as well. It's if you were building the engine from scratch or recreating it from scratch, you wouldn't recreate a little bug like that. It makes me think that they are actually using the original code base to build upon.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what you want from a remaster, basically. It plays exactly like the original games. The handling's exactly the same. It's just been, you know, ported to modern systems. Nice new textures on everything.
It does look really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really great. I was skeptical about it because I don't trust remasters these days. I think I was expecting it to be a bit of a rush job, a bit glitchy. But no, it's apparently it's been developed kind of like Sonic Mania. It's been developed mostly by fans.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, one of the main guy in charge of it was, he's the guy who made the Open Lara project.
Yeah.
He's sort of the head honcho of the remasters. And they basically let him pick his team that he wanted to work with. So it's sort of a who's who of the sort of Tomb Raider fan game community and, you know, people who've worked on various mods and stuff throughout the year. So it's
that explains why it's so good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I did think, how have they managed to pull that off when a lot of other people have failed to do the same thing? Like the Grand Theft Auto ones, for example, are famously not that good, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's really good. And it was only, like, I don't know, 20 quid?
Yeah, it's quite cheap, isn't it? Yeah.
It's really cheap for what it is. And there's a couple of Easter eggs hidden in the game as well that people have found, hinting that Tomb Raider 4 and 5 are going to be remastered as well.
Yeah.
I suspect, I've got no basis for this at all, but my suspicion is that Tomb Raider 4 and 5 are already remastered. Mm. I think they just wanted to get it out the door because Lara Croft's birthday, in quotation marks, is February the 14th. Mm. So I think they wanted to try and get something out on February the 14th, you know, just as a thing, you know, it's Lara's birthday, here's a collection of games. And I think probably they didn't get round to finishing 4 and 5 in time to get it out there. And it'll probably be released as DLC, hopefully this year, I'd have thought. Because the team that the development team responsible for it have been sold. So,
like sold to another company? Or?
Yeah, they were part of Embracer Group, and Embracer Group have got rid of them.
Sold.
So yeah, I don't know if that means they'll be working on any more Tomb Raider projects or what. But I mean, like I say, there's a couple of really heavy hints that Tomb Raider 4 and 5 will be getting the same treatment. So hopefully the work has been done and it's, you know, it's just a case of polishing it up before getting out there. But yeah, if you've got any interest in Tomb Raider, or if you've got any nostalgia for the original games, I'd definitely pick them up. It's a good remaster.
Yeah, well, that's great. I haven't got a lot of experience with the Tomb Raider games, but even I'm tempted to pick it up at some point because it looks just looks really nice. Looks like a nice way to introduce yourself to the franchise if you haven't already.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that. That's what's taken most of my time, really. I haven't even finished Ape Escape, but I have played a lot of it before, like a few times before when it came out and a few years ago as well. So I'm going to rely mostly on my experience.
I was hoping you would. Yeah, that's fine. Similar story for me, actually. I've got a good reason for it, though, which I'll get into in a minute. The one thing I did play this week is Berserk Boy.
Oh, yes.
Which is the other game that we could have done. For any listeners remember from last month, we could have done either Ape Escape or Berserk Boy, depending on whether we could get review keys for it, but which we didn't, sadly. But I've been playing it this week. It's good. It's good. It's a 2D platformer. People say it's very much like the Mega Man X games, which I'm not that familiar with, but I'll take their word for it. But it's a bit more of a fast-paced affair. So it's really fun just sort of dashing between enemies and things. You know, I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. But I've been busy at work lately, so I haven't been playing a lot of games either, really. But I've been working on quite an exciting project that I thought I might mention a bit.
Nah, it's all right. Let's go on to... anyway, Ape Escape. So,
we don't hear about that. I don't want to hear about Ollie's work. No, for anyone who doesn't know, I work for a company that makes sort of relatively small-scale games and apps, mainly for kids, tied to particular brands, usually kids' TV shows, that kind of thing. So I've been working on a 2.5D platformer, actually.
Oh.
For a quite a... I don't know how much I'm at liberty to talk about, really, but let's just say it's for an extremely well-known cartoon character. And I've been having a lot of fun doing it, actually. I normally code things, but this time I'm also doing the level design, which is my favourite thing to do with games, really. So yeah, that's been taking up a lot of my time. I've been putting a lot of, like, you know, ideas for my favourite platformers in and things like that, trying to make each world unique. So
is it Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, it is. How did you know? Was that a guess or?
Yeah, it was a guess.
It was a guess.
Yeah, you've not told me about it. So
I know.
No,
I
no, it's,
no,
it's
no
a,
exactly.
A complete
no, it
guess.
Is. It's yeah, it is Mickey Mouse. I'll be adding to the plethora of Mickey games that have come out, which is it's pretty cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm having loads of fun with it.
News.
Okay, so that kind of brings that section of the podcast to an end, really, doesn't it? Like.
We've been recording for 12 minutes.
I know. That's like the shortest what we've been playing ever, I think, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
You got any news to talk about?
No.
Okay, I've got one thing that's, okay. that we might get a bit of conversation out of. So Nintendo versus Yuzu, the Switch emulator. Bad times. So they've successfully forced the takedown and ceasing of all development on the popular Switch emulator Yuzu, and unfortunately with it the 3DS emulator Citra as well. This is a company called Tropic Haze seems to make both of them, and they agreed to settle, or they're going to pay $2.4 million to Nintendo, and they're agreeing never to work on Yuzu again, removing it from their website, Discord, etc. It's a huge blow for emulation in general, really.
Kind of. I don't think it's quite as bad as people are making it out to be.
Mm.
I don't think it's going to have the sort of chilling effect on emulation that,
I mean,
that everyone seems to think it
will. No, but it is. I feel like if Nintendo think they can do that with one, you know, are they going to come after, like, the Wii U emulator, Dolphin? I mean,
I don't think so. The reason being, I mean, as far as I understand it, I will admit everything I say could be completely wrong.
Mm.
This is just going from chatter I've read online and various articles and things like that. So I don't claim to be a lawyer. I don't know the ins and outs of it. This is just what I've heard. So rumour and speculation, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
But as I understand it, what really drew Nintendo's ire was the fact that the Yuzu emulator, the latest versions of it, were locked behind a Patreon paywall.
Yeah.
And they were specifically using telemetry gathered from the Patreon versions to fix bugs and make Tears of the Kingdom playable. Because it leaked a month early, I think.
Yes.
And it was the thing that put a target on their back. It's the fact that they were charging money for versions of their emulator that would specifically run a game that you had no legal way of obtaining.
Yeah.
And there's also allegations of prod keys, which you need to decrypt the ROMs, and ROMs themselves being shared by moderators on their Discord, their Patreon-only Discord.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about that. I wasn't a member of the Discord. This is just stuff I've heard. But a lot of unwise behaviour on the part of Yuzu that really put themselves in Nintendo's crosshairs, I think.
Yeah.
Dolphin and the other sort of emulators, they don't do...
They're
even
a lot more
at
careful,
the prime,
aren't they?
They never did anything like that.
No, exactly. That's true. Yeah, I mean, it is technically legal to use an emulator and to develop an emulator, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. Well, I don't know what the equivalent law in the UK would be. There is one, I think, but in America, the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, you're not allowed to circumvent copy protection measures.
Yeah.
The emulator itself is fine, but if you need to, you know, to run anything, you would, you know, you'd need either a ROM or your product keys, your console keys and stuff to run it, and you cannot get those without breaking the DMCA. So it's kind of a sort of a stalemate between the emulator developers and Nintendo or whatever console manufacturer, really. But emulators themselves, in principle, are absolutely legal. You're right.
Yeah.
But
There's always there's always a component that you need.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's a BIOS or, you know, anything like that. Where you need it to run anything really.
Very murky waters.
It is.
From the sounds of it, it seems like Yuzu brought a lot of the problems on themselves, and I don't think it's problems that are going to be copied or are even. I don't think any of the other emulators and services out there are doing anything like that. So I don't think this is going to be. I hope I'm right, but I don't think this is going to be the start of a campaign against emulators and ROMs, you know, broadly speaking. But I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Mm. Yeah. I think you're right. Most of the others seem to know what they can and can't do to keep themselves safe, I think. So we've got to hope that. But it's the same, the Citra went as well, the 3DS emulator, because I don't use Yuzu yet, because I don't. You know, because I've got the Switch, I don't really want to pirate the games. In the future, I was planning on using it, but I do use Citra exclusively for 3DS because I can't really use the actual machines anymore. Mm. And so it's a shame to see that taken down, because that was still, you know, that was a great emulator and it was still in development. You know, it was still, there's still games that don't fully work on it, and they were, you know, they were gradually going through those, but.
The thing is, I mean, they were both open source up to a point. Like I say, they were keeping the latest versions behind the paywalls. And although the GitHubs have been taken down for them, the code is out there.
You
don't have to look far to find mirrors of the latest version. So there's enough there that any sufficiently motivated team of developers out there. I think under the terms of the legal agreement that same code can't be distributed anymore. But if someone was sufficiently motivated, they could probably replicate the work, you know, they could build on what was done already. It's going to take some time to do, but I don't think it's game over for Switch or 3DS emulation. I think it's just going to take a little bit of time to recover.
A bit of a setback, isn't it? But there are always really passionate people who want to see these things carry on, and I'm sure they will. I mean, I wonder if it's a good idea to emulate current systems from the perspective of developing emulators. What do you think about that? Do you think emulators should wait until the system's done before they start getting publicly released?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, Sony have moved on to the PlayStation 5 now, but I mean, towards the tail end of the PS4, there was a PlayStation 4 emulator that was getting to the stage where it could boot commercial games, and I don't recall there being any pushback from Sony regarding it. I think it's all about how you do it, really. I mean, I don't think it's, you know, a bulletproof method, but if your emulator is just on GitHub and it's a really uninviting page of just text and descriptions on how to compile and build it yourself, and it's really, really dry looking, I don't know if that's going to attract much attention as if you've got a fancy website showing all the latest games running on all your emulator. And do you know what I mean? If you're positioning yourself as a clear competitor to the original hardware, I think you're going to have a rougher time than if it's just a dry GitHub page that, you know, unless you're into it, you'd have to take one look at it and think, I can't be bothered doing any of that. I can't be bothered with that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think that basically. Yeah, don't make too much of a song and dance about it.
I suppose
don't position yourself as a competitor.
I suppose it's difficult if once it gets into the hands of people and then they make it into something bigger than you intended for it. Maybe that's another factor, I suppose. But I mean,
or the other way to look at it, I would say, would be it's the same argument I've had with fan projects for games, particularly not so much Sega, although they did shut down Streets of Rage Remake.
Funny enough, another article I've got here is they recently shut down a Golden Axe fan game, Golden Axe Returns.
That's because they got their new one coming out in there.
Yeah, it seems weird though, isn't it? Because they're constantly making new Sonic games, and we've had hundreds and hundreds of Sonic fan games alongside them. Not one of them's been shut down.
No, and an annual expo of fan games that Sega are well aware of.
Well aware of, and yet for some, it seems to be untouchable. They seem to understand that taking any of those down will have massive repercussions for them. But Golden Axe seems to be fair. As long as they've got a game coming out for it, they can just say, yeah, take that out. I guess it's different teams keeping an eye on them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem right, does it?
It doesn't seem consistent.
But no.
I mean, I think if you're out there at the moment and you're developing a fan game, I don't care how proud of it you are or how excited about it you are, just keep it to yourself until the day of release.
It's the best idea, isn't it? Especially when Nintendo are concerned.
Especially, if you've got a Pokemon or a Metroid remake, you know, another Metroid 2 remake, that was, taken down, but it was taken down after it was released fully formed and out there. So it doesn't matter then. It's mirrored in a million different places.
Exactly. Once you got it out there, that's fine. They can't do anything about that.
Yeah. But don't go and announce, coming next year, our brand new Nintendo fan game, because you're going to get shut down.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're going to do an emulator of a modern system, work on it to the stage where it can boot a few commercial games, then release it.
Mm.
Don't, the longer you, the more forewarning you give the legal teams of the relative copyright owners, the more likely you're going to get shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep it quiet.
Wise words from Tibbs.
Not legal advice, though. I'm not telling you how to commit copyright crimes.
Tibbs would like to make clear that he's not a lawyer.
No.
He will not act as your legal advisor in any of this.
No.
Yes, absolutely. You need to look elsewhere for that. Anything else you want to talk about that's been going on?
There probably is, but I'm really not firing on all cylinders today, so I can't.
No, right.
My mind's going a little bit blank. I know there's been some drama, some gaming drama that I'm not inclined to talk about because I don't really care. The Sweet Baby Ink thing, have you been following that?
No, I've no idea what that is.
Okay, well, keep it that way. The only thing I would say is that it's all this controversy about this company, blah, blah, blah. No one's talking about how crap the logo is. That's the real controversy, this Sweet Baby Ink. Look up Sweet Baby Ink and look at that bloody logo.
Like a green baby thing. Hang on.
Oh, guys, awful.
Oh, I see. Like a green baby with the Dreamcast logo inside it.
Kind of like it's like a fat jelly baby with a lollipop.
Yeah.
Just dreadful.
What is this then?
It's apparently Gamergate 2.0.
I think I got a whiff of this at some point, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to touch it with a barge pole. To be honest, I just It reminded me, we only said that's the only other big gaming story in the press at the moment I could think of, and nobody's mentioning how bad that logo is. And that's the real issue.
It annoys me
every time it pops up, that bloody logo, it's like, come on.
Yeah, that does look
dreadful.
Stupid, doesn't it? Sweet
Can
baby.
You imagine that?
I see what they were going for. Sweet Baby is a baby with like a lollipop inside it, but yeah. Could come up with a better logo than that.
A much better logo.
That's almost like the first draft of a logo design, isn't it? Right, Sweet Baby, lolly stick, done.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. That's exactly what they've done. They just overlaid like two bits of clip art.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they made a mood board, two things on it, put them together, done.
But yeah.
Okay.
That's my contribution to the
news,
the discourse.
Okay. I've got incoming indie before we head on into the world of Ape Escape.
Okay.
Incoming indie.
This is called Yellow Taxi Goes Vroom. That's the name of the game. This is a 3D sort of pixel art styled collectathon, but instead of a platforming character, you play as a little sort of wind up taxi.
Okay.
It's coming out on Steam on the 9th of April. There is a demo out at time of recording, which I've tried, and it's pretty mental. You can watch a trailer, and I suggest you do. And you know when you watch a trailer, and it kind of cuts all these action scenes together, and you wonder, what is the gameplay really like that? I mean, how much of the game am I spending playing like that? And you play the game, and it is just like the trailer. It is just kind of crazy. There's just something really quick and responsive about the controls in a sort of manic way that is constantly moving. It's quite jarring, but it feels weirdly out of control, but in at the same time perfectly in control. It's very hard to describe.
I'm just looking at the trailer now. Hang on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I like that.
It's got an interesting art style. It's very sort of crazy, very vibrant, very sort of quick cut trailer. Interestingly, you can't jump because it's a car. You have to, if you see a collectible and it's on a higher thing, you need to work out how to hit a ramp at a certain speed to get it, that kind of thing. So it's nice. It's nice. There's a world where it's a bit like Crazy Taxi, where you have to pick people up and drop them off. A lot of humour in the game. A lot of sort of humorous nods to Mario in particular. The bad guys are an evil car company called Tosler. So it's pretty crazy. If you do nothing else, I suggest you check out the trailer, because
it looks really good.
It's kind of it's good fun.
Like, he looks like he's dapping about Green Hill Zone there as well.
I think there's quite a sort of nods to a lot of games and things.
So is that out now, or is that coming?
No, it's
out
demo
soon,
out. Demo out now, coming to Steam on the 9th of April, so quite soon.
Cool. Mm. What happened to that fishing game?
Oh, the big catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that still coming?
Should be coming this year.
I backed that on Kickstarter.
So did I. Yeah, yeah. I haven't heard from a lot recently. They're not one of those Kickstarter people that give you a lot of updates, but I assume it's still going.
I don't know what about that trailer made me think of it. Maybe it's just like the sort of retro-y art style.
Yeah, I think so,
because
that was a PS1 styled one, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Another platform I haven't played yet is that Penny's Big Breakaway, the Sonic Mania team one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Seems to be gone down quite well. I haven't got.
I'm going to say a lot of people are saying that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, maybe next time. Right. Anything else you want to talk about before we get to Apescape?
No.
Okay, let's do it then. In a minute.
Video Game Book Club.
Okay, we're back with Ape Escape. This was developed. What's so funny?
We take our little break.
Yeah.
And then Ollie literally just said, right, okay. We're like professional broadcasters, obviously.
Of course we are. Of course.
So we give ourselves a little countdown before we go in. He goes, right, so 10 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever. Right, here we are. It barely took a beat, not even a breath. Like 10 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever.
I don't. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Ever since the first episode, we always say this 5 second rule, don't we?
It's
never actually 5 seconds. It's always just like an amount that's vaguely like 5 seconds.
I know, but it's usually enough for me to have a slurp of coffee or something. Like,
it is, but you can still carry on slurping because I'm talking. I'm the one who's got to be prepared. You just got to listen.
Oh, okay. Well, you carry on then. Carry on. Take two.
Right, we're back with Ape Escape. Developed by Japan Studio, published by Sony Computer Entertainment, it was released for the Sony PlayStation in June 1999 in America and Japan, and just a week or two later in Europe. You can probably find it for about £20 to £30 these days. So, the story. When a white-haired monkey named Spectre puts on a peak point helmet designed by a professor to increase his intelligence, it also has the slight side effect of turning him evil. Fitting his fellow simians with their own helmets, he launches an attack on the professor's lab and sends the monkeys back in time via a time machine that the professor's also been working on. Their objective is to change the course of history in order to place Spectre as the ruler of the world. As Spike, a boy who knows a professor, and along with friend Jake, you must travel back in time across various eras, locating and capturing monkeys using yet more of the professor's various gadgets. Now, this is a game that you can tell the gameplay came first, and then that story came afterwards in order to be an excuse for the gameplay. That story wasn't the genesis of this idea, definitely.
No.
But yeah, this is a 3D platformer. Levels are kind of open world-ish, actually. You just have to sort of explore them and find monkeys and capture them. And each level, there's usually more monkeys than there are the requirement to catch them, which is quite nice. And then you catch as many monkeys as you can, and you grab the required number, and then you move on to the next level and repeat. So, you got history with this game?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What sort of history?
No, I did. I played it back when it came out, because it was actually the first game, I'm sure you found in your research, it was the first game to require the use of a DualShock pad.
It was, yes.
Or a dual analog pad. I think you could use the... if you had dual analog sticks, I think you were fine. But
Is there a difference? Dual analog?
Yeah, the dual analog came out. Well, it's a bit. We're getting a bit into the weeds here, but the dual analog was essentially like a DualShock. The prongs were a little bit longer, and it had no vibration function. It came out. I think it came out at the launch of the PlayStation in the UK, and then the DualShock came later on. But interestingly, there are games that came out before the DualShock that had DualShock functionality, Porsche Challenge, which came on the demo disc that I got with my PlayStation, the 1997 demo disc, game Porsche Challenge actually has DualShock capability on that, and that was before the DualShock was launched. And I think that's because the dual analog in Japan might have had vibration functions. I don't know. But, yeah, you couldn't use the pack-in digital joypads.
The standard one, yes. Yeah. Yes,
it just wouldn't work with it.
Yeah. I wonder why. Because, obviously, they've made this game as a sort of a gimmick to make you play the DualShock, I feel. Rather than it being a game that has to require two separate sticks and whatever, it's kind of a game that you could easily change the controls to make it work without needing that second stick.
I think you could.
Sorry, just to interject here while I'm editing, such is the quality of this discussion, I realised shortly after this moment that we don't make it very clear how the control system actually works in this game with regard to using the various gadgets. So for anyone not familiar with this game, basically you accumulate a variety of gadgets through the course of the levels, which you can freely assign to any of the face buttons, X, circle, triangle and square, much like in a Zelda game. Unlike in a Zelda game, or in any conventional use of this system, just pressing that button doesn't activate the gadget, the character just brings it out ready for use. The right thumbstick is actually how you use it, so the net or the sword, for example, can be swung in the direction that you hold that stick, independently of which direction you're facing at the time. Hopefully that makes the next bit of discussion a little bit clearer.
Some of the things like swinging the net around, it feels more natural with an analog stick, but I don't think it would be impossible for the game to be reworked to just work on a D-pad with a standard controller.
I mean, obviously the stick helps with any 3D platform and the left stick moving around better than a digital. I'm not disputing that, but I found the controls difficult to get on with. I think I got on with them eventually, but the whole swinging the net in the direction that you want to go in just didn't feel very natural to me, I must admit. I couldn't work out why you couldn't just press the X button, swing the net in whichever direction you're facing. Like, that just seems, in hindsight, I don't know how different it was at the time, and obviously they're trying to promote, just trying to find ways of using this stick, and it wasn't at the time obvious that you would use the stick more for the camera, which most games do now. But it just seems a lot easier just to use those buttons to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, like I said, I did play it when it came out, so I think maybe...
I guess it was a new, exciting thing.
Yeah, and I don't think I really thought as critically about games then as I do now. Like, when we're reviewing something, when we're doing something for the podcast, we think about these things.
Of course,
And when I wouldn't have back then, I would have just said, oh, that's how you play it, you use that stick, and you just get used to it, I think. So there's probably an element of that. But I do think... I think you're right. I think the game was used as a vehicle to sell the DualShock to people. They needed a game to show... A game that they could claim, here's something that just can't be done on a digital pad. You need the DualShock to experience this game as it's intended. And I think they did that... Ape Escape was the game they chose to be the vehicle to get the DualShock into people's hands, really. But yeah, I think it could easily be played on a D-pad, with, like you say, just have it the net or the weapon attack in whichever direction you're facing and things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But yeah,
when I was looking on Wikipedia, it said there was a lot of praise for the controls at the time. You know, that it was reviewed well for that. People found it quite exciting. So, yeah, it was just curious that, you know, coming to it so much later on, that, you know, I didn't quite have that same reaction. But to be fair, some of the later gadgets that you get, I think, do have a bit more of a use for that stick, like the radar. You turn the stick around, and this little radar comes out, and it points in the direction of where you're pointing the stick, and that will tell you whether there's a monkey in that direction or not. So that's something that you couldn't do quite so easily without it, I think.
No, but I mean, there's sort of things that you could tweak that mechanic if you didn't have the DualShock to work with. If you weren't given the brief, you need to make this game work with a DualShock and nothing else. You could still do that game.
Just,
you know,
in
you could tweak those things to make them work.
Whatever direction he was facing. Yeah. I didn't get far, but there's also a little remote control car later on as well, which I assume allows you to move and control the car at the same time with both of the sticks. Is that right? Like the right stick controls the
As far as I remember, I didn't get that far in this playthrough.
Yeah. So that's that looked interesting anyway. But yeah, so there's I think it's worth noting that there's a PSP remake or re-release of the game where it did exactly that. I think it took away that right stick because the PSP didn't have it and replaced it with
the PSP didn't have one. Yeah,
the buttons. So I didn't try that. I think it didn't get reviewed.
I've never played that one. No,
it didn't review as well. I don't know if that's the reason and people just didn't like that control scheme for it. I don't know.
I don't know if any of the sequels have really reviewed as well, to be honest. And I was thinking this. I have actually played Ape Escape 2. And I can't remember anything about it.
Okay. Yeah,
I can't remember if I enjoyed it. I can't remember. It's one of those games I know I've played, but I can't tell you anything about it.
I had a feeling you might...
So maybe it just didn't stick in my head as much.
You might know about the sequels more. You might be able to tell us much about them, but I guess not. Never mind.
No.
Okay. I guess it's basically the same sort of premise, right? With a few more bells and whistles added, I guess.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
No, I just...
we don't know.
This episode's dreadful.
It's not the best.
No,
one so
I think. No, it's not, is it? It's not. Jokes aside, I think as far as I can recall, I think Ape Escape 2 is more of the same. I think Ape Escape 3 started to vary, and I think there was a couple of spin-offs as well. If I recall, I haven't looked at the Wikipedia page, to be honest with you. I do remember there is a Ape Escape crossover with Metal Gear Solid.
Is there? Fun. they don't strike me as two franchises that would gel well together somehow. How does that work?
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. Really? Okay. It's on Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence. I think it's only on the PlayStation 2 version that came out. There's an extra mini game where it's Ape Escape, but you are Snake hunting down the apes, and they're like in the forest. You shoot them with a little tranquilizer.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's basically exactly as you would imagine it.
It does sound quite cool, actually.
The maps of Metal Gear Solid 3 with the little monkeys and their little hats, the little light hats, and you've got to catch them. It's great.
Okay.
It's really good.
All right, cool. Yeah, sounds good. So the apes themselves, they are quite cute, aren't they? They've got a bit of personality to them.
Oh, they're great, yeah.
You were looking for a Ape Escape hat in real life, weren't you? Did you come up with anything there?
No. I can't believe they don't sell them.
Well, it seems like such an obvious thing, isn't it? They've got these little sirens on that seem to shows their state. So, like, a different colour means that they're sort of eyed on. They haven't noticed you. Another one is they're suspicious. And it's red as, you know, they're running away from you. And I did like how they reacted to you. Like, I was sort of expecting that when they notice you, they just start running around in the area they are and you've got to catch them. But they are quite clever. They can use the environment around them to, like, jump over across platforms, even go into the water and swim away from you, you know, jump across bridges and things like that. I thought that was really impressive, actually.
Yeah, they are surprisingly hard to catch as well, some of them.
They are.
You know, they really are. They give you a proper run around.
Yeah, and you've got to use different strategies for different ones as well, haven't you? Like, you've got to, some of them might be high up, so you've got to use a slingshot to knock them down. Any other examples? I can't think of any others now.
Well, you bonk them on the head with the your baton. I can't remember what they call it.
Well, it's like a sword thing, isn't there?
Yeah, so it's like a lightsaber type thing.
This is a lightsaber. I think that's mainly used for... Because there's regular enemies hanging around in the levels as well, isn't there? That's quite annoying, and you need to bash them away.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're meant to be. It's like some of them are like little round turnip things, aren't they? They run about.
Yeah, they are. All the levels are based in periods of history as well, aren't they? So you start in the dinosaur period, and then you move to, you know, sort of a more jungly area and a ice world, and then you start to get elements of civilization. I think it ends up in like the current day, doesn't it?
Futuristic, modern-y.
Yeah.
Bits. You can hit them with a stick. You've got a slingshot you can hit them with.
Yeah. The hula hoop. That's a bit gimmicky, wasn't it?
A little bit.
That's like a speed up boost thing, but you've got to twiddle the stick around to go quick.
It does feel a bit. It's kind of like Wii games.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So they
like, we've got this technology, so everything, you know, we're just going to shoehorn in something to use this controller.
Yes.
And it's kind of like that.
Some of the tool, it's a bit like when you're playing a regular platformer on the Wii, but for a particular action. Rather than press a button like you normally would, you have to shake it or you have to do some sort of weird action with the Wii remote to trigger that action, just because it's there and it's on the Wii. You know, it's the same thing for this, really, in the DualShock. You've got to make use of the DualShock in ways, you know, that haven't been done before.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it from that point of view
at
the time. In hindsight, it feels a bit kind of gimmicky and a bit unnecessary, but it just, I think you have to put yourself back in the time period to fully appreciate it, I guess, don't you?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think, I don't know, I was going to say, I think people, like modern gamers, are more accepting of different control types and gimmicky controllers and things, but I don't know if that's even true anymore, because we've lamented before that you don't really get much weird peripherals these days.
I
love, like, you know, games, you know, light gun games. You get, like, even the Wii balance board, dance pads, any weird way to control a game, any weird extra peripheral. I love all that stuff. So, you know, to me, a control pad that, you know, vibrated and had extra sticks, I would have been in on that anyway, because I love all that kind of work, all that kind of stuff. But maybe back then people were a bit more, you know, well, I've already got two controllers, I'm not going to buy a third controller just for one game kind of thing. So they wanted to show, well, look, you can spin a hula hoop.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe 1999 people were amazed by that. Yeah. So I did. I like the general level design, in that most of the levels aren't just a linear series of stuff, because it's more about capturing the monkeys. They are quite sort of open and a bit more like a collectathon, sort of like a Banjo-Kazooie stage, almost like a sort of slightly like a miniature version of one. I kind of felt like maybe it would have been better if it was. Those, rather than having a series of levels like that and each one is a different area, maybe a bit more of a larger open thing where when playing these, I almost wanted to spend a bit longer in those levels and explore, because it seemed like at the time like they had a lot of areas to them, a lot of facets to them that you could mess around with and find monkeys. And I almost wonder if it'd be better off with, rather than a world separated into however many stages there were, four or five, having just one big world to explore, I guess. But I mean, you got platform considerations to, you know, limitations to.
Yeah, I was going to say.
To consider. Don't know what else to say, really.
What about a lovely drum and bass soundtrack?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say I quite liked it, actually. It's very of the time, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It really, proper late 90s.
Late 90s drum and bass. Some of it quite repetitive, but I did quite like it. There's a nostalgic quality to it that I quite enjoyed.
Yeah.
Did struggle with the camera, I must admit.
Yeah.
Not one to complain about the cameras a lot in games, but I think with this one, you come across a monkey and the camera's in the wrong place and the monkey's noticed you, he starts running away. You want that camera to be focused on the monkey. You want to be able to capture him, and he's sort of gone off screen and you've got to spend time moving that camera around to try and follow him. That was a bit of an annoyance.
Yeah. It's the
urgency that was the problem there. If I was just playing a regular platform where I could go at my own pace, it wouldn't be as much of a problem. But it did get in the way of the capturing of monkeys. Anything else? I feel like we haven't done this, our due diligence on this somehow, but I don't know.
No, I kind of feel the same. I think we both let the side down on this one.
We have. It's not.
I'm not just talking Ape Escape. This whole show.
This whole show has been a bit.
It's a write-off. Let's be honest.
It's been a bit rubbish. It's not our best one.
No. Coming back here.
Should we ditch it and just start again next week?
Well, look. If we could just pad it out for the next 8 minutes, we can just at least call it an hour show then.
Yeah, that's pad.
So. So the Sony PlayStation, that was a console released in 1994 in Japan.
Yeah, we should talk about it because it's quite an obscure console that no one's ever heard of.
There isn't a lot you can say about it. I mean, you catch the apes.
You catch the apes, yeah. They're quite they're amusing, they're quite comical, you know, it can be quite difficult to track them down, you know.
Yeah.
It's
not a game that's terribly complex, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's kind of like when we talked about lemmings, you know, you get the lemmings from point A to point B, and you avoid the traps. That's basically it. You do that over the course of 120 levels. But that doesn't mean Lemmings is a bad game. It's just... It's got its little formula, and if the formula clicks with you, you're going to have a nice time throughout the duration of the game. But it's not the kind of game that sort of evolves too much as it goes on. If you play the first few worlds, you've basically got the idea of what you're going to be in for the rest of the game. So if it hasn't clicked with you by then, you know, I wouldn't persevere with it. But if you're having fun, that's great, you know. But there isn't a lot we can really sort of deconstruct or talk about past the core mechanics of the game. It's certainly not a lore-heavy game. We can't really go into the story of it.
We could go into some of the cutscenes. I did notice that a lot of the voice acting is not great in this game, is it? In fact, a lot of them sound like just the same guy doing the voices, and not even like varying the voice very much for each one. Like the villain just sounds exactly like the main character, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, but that adds to the charm.
It does add to the charm. I like that. People complain about that sort of thing. I like it. It's great. It's very charming.
I love it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I love bad voice acting games.
I like bad. I guess it's that kind of like the phenomenon of people saying films are so bad they're good.
Yeah.
If it's done earnestly, I find it charming. If a game deliberately did bad voice acting, I wouldn't like that. I'd find that annoying. But it's the fact that it's obviously it's earnest. They're obviously trying to do a good take, and it just came out bad. Like this show.
A bit like this show. Yeah. Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, but on your point about how some games that we pick are just a bit too simplistic to talk about, it is quite difficult to find a game that is worthy of a lot of discussion. Like we do stumble on them quite often, but like when I pick a game, I don't want to find out too much about it before, you know, I play it, because I feel like that would spoil it.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, if it turns out that we can't talk, we can't say much about it, then it's kind of difficult, isn't it? There's a balance there somewhere.
It is.
Yeah. But yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good fun. I like the concept. I think, you know, but there are elements of its execution that aren't great. I think that's mainly down to the controls. I mean, I couldn't get on with the swimming either. That was a tricky one.
Yeah, the swimming was tricky.
Was it that you had to like click the L button to go down or something like that? I ended up changing the configuration on my emulator on the controls, just because that was so uncomfortable to hold that down and move at the same time.
Yeah.
So that was pretty horrible. By the way, I had no idea that the DualShock could do clicking the thumbsticks. I was like, when I played this, I was like today years old when I found that out. I thought, learning that the Xbox 360 controller could do that. That's the first time I encountered like clickable joystick buttons. I was like, whoa, I had no idea you could do this. And it turns out it's been there since PS1. That surprised me.
Yeah, it's been there, since day dot.
Yeah, okay.
I got to say as well, I don't know whether we're going to cut this bit out or not, but we got the lag come back again. The lag is back. This show is a shambles. This is the worst in our repertoire. It's technical problems all the way down. I'm going to go back to bed.
I think so. Yeah, it's should we just skip it and just like not release it and just go straight to episode 60 after this, and people be wondering?
Just pretend Ape Escape never happened.
What happened to episode 59? No. Didn't meet our standards of quality, so we binned it.
No, we binned.
All right. So next time, then, Tibbs, what are we going to play?
Next time, we're going to play, and I'm wondering if I should have picked something else now, because I haven't. It's a game. It's what you were saying before. I don't want to know too much about it before we go into it. So I picked a game that I think is going to be up our alley, but I've never played it, so I can't be sure.
Okay.
So I'm risking another stinker of an episode, but we're going to be playing. we're going to be playing I forgot what it's called, hang on. It's called it's called Corn Kid 64.
Corn Kid 64, I haven't heard of this. It sounds good though. It sounds
Corn
promising.
Kid 64, it's a 3D collectathon platformer.
I probably could have told you that just by the title, to be honest. Corn Kid 64. Okay, yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I was expecting it to look like. Okay, cool. I like this sort of thing. This is good. Let me have a quick look at the. Oh yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. This is very much exactly what you would expect from the name. I think just a lovely looking.
Yes.
N64 style visuals, 3D platformer, but sort of a modern made one that someone's put together. I'm surprised I haven't seen this before, actually.
Yeah.
It's quite recently. Well, I
was expecting you to say, when I said corn kits, I was expecting you to go, oh. But
yeah.
No,
okay, this has passed me by. This looks really cool, actually. I like it. Yeah, cool. On sale at the moment for £4.71. Very good.
It's a steal.
Normal price is only £5.89, so there you go. Give that a download, and we'll play and discuss next time.
Yes.
if there still is a next time, you know, we might decide to pack the whole thing in. I don't know.
Yeah, time to pull the shutters down, call it a day.
Yeah, we've had a good run. But we've come to a natural conclusion. Assuming that we don't decide to do that, you can email us. Well, what should we give them a new email address? We've got you've done some tinkering. You've set up a mail server for us, haven't you? So, have we got like a
yeah we've got a little mail server set up now.
Have we got an email? I know you made one for you and me separately. Should we have one for the podcast in general? Like a
yeah. What do you want it to be?
I don't know. it's podmup at podmup.live.
Mail at podmup.live?
Yeah, sounds good to me. Okay, let's make that. And then, yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at our brand new email address, mail@podmup.live. You can also tweet us on Twitter. We are @podmup. And podmup.live is also the website where you can go and look at all our past episodes. And you can also get us on terraplayer.com and where all good podcasts are sold and available for free. Right, that let's put this episode out of its misery, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please come back.
Come back next time. Don't let this episode put you off. We'll do a better one next time, I promise.
Can you imagine if any of our regular listeners, they've been like telling their mates, you've got to listen to Podmup. Honestly, it's really good. It's a really good show. And finally they go, listen, shut up. I will listen to Podmup. If you shut up about it, I will listen. And then they pick this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Ape Escape. Oh. I remember that. Yeah. I'll listen to this episode where they talk about it. Yeah. That was a mistake. Yeah. You should have gone for Phoenix Wright or something. One of our better episodes, you know.
Yeah,
we've done lots of good ones, better than this, honestly. Yeah, if you didn't like this, don't, you know, just go and find it.
Honestly,
that Simpsons one we did a couple of episodes ago, that was a banger. Go and listen to that.
That was brilliant. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that was great. Don't listen to this one; it's rubbish. Right, I think the lag has become unbearable now, so we should stop.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Oh, bye.
Worst episode ever.
clip show.
I'll just do it. Yeah, put out a clip show. <That's>... Episode 59 did not meet our standards of quality, so here's some clips from better episodes.